8 PM and present.
This meeting is being recorded.
And present are Commissioners Orlando and Walker and myself, Beriducci. So you can participate in this hearing by going to the Zoom meeting link posted on our agenda online at zoom.us/1/960819839188 or by calling 1-646-931-3860 and entering meeting ID number 960-819-8-3918. And you can also submit written comments to us via email at blc@boston.gov. So in accordance with the Commonwealth of Massachusetts Executive Order suspending certain provisions of the open meeting law, including the July 16, 2022 amendment, extending the suspension of these provisions until March 31, 2025, we are conducting this meeting online. To ensure public access to the deliberations of the Boston Landmarks Commission, the public may access this call through telephone, telephone and video conferencing. The hearing is being recorded. All conversations between commissioners should be audible to the public in attendance until the hearing has been adjourned. And we always first ask if there are any media or elected officials present that I would ask that you identify yourself now by stating your name, title, and affiliation. And if no one is coming forward, we can then go on to the next, or to the first and actually the only application tonight. And that is application 22.1280 at 361 Center Street, the Blessed Sacrament Church in Jamaica Plain. This is a review and design of the provisos that were voted on at a previous presentation on February 28, 2023. And these include detailed window section and corresponding scaled elevations for the main sanctuary arched windows, specifically the detail at the metal panel covering and floor span. The next is adding horizontal muntins to the new side lights at the two side aisle front doors on the facade of the building and address a solution to the commission's request to store or reuse the original aisle doors at the interior of the building. So the applicant can introduce yourself and get started.
I'm making your goes, and Philippe is often a co-host. So you guys should be able to turn your video on and unmute. And just let me know if there's anyone else.
Thanks, this is Becca. If you could also make Charlie Adams the co-host. Yeah, thank you.
I see him.
So just quickly, we submitted a narrative to address the provisos along with a slide deck that Philippe from Demille Schaefer will run through. We've discussed this with Joe and Chelsea and members of the BPDA's design team as well. So the kind of diagrams, elevations, the detail you'll see has been really dug into, embedded by our architect team, our envelope consultant, our sustainability consultants, and a whole range of folks. So we believe this is very comprehensive and that we're in a position this afternoon to get approval that we've addressed the provisos listed at the February meeting.
Okay.
And I'll turn it over to Philippe and his team to run through the slide deck.
All right. Thank you, Rebecca. Good afternoon, everybody. Rebecca, are you moving the slides or is it somebody else?
Chelsea.
Hi, Chelsea. We can skip through those first five or six. This is the full submission. I think everybody's very familiar by now with the building as it is.
Yeah.
And then if you keep going. Yes, we can start here. I think at last meeting, the commission was asking us about, can we put aluminum windows next to the UPVC rehow window series and understand better the profiles. So we did this, and it's a different product. and we also accompanied the details with how would they look on the outside. The top one is an aluminum window with its detail. Next to it, this is the double hung mechanism that is 2 inch high. And then the UPVC window, which is at the bottom image, which is in a historic building, and it has a 3.25 profile window, mullion. I want to please make the distinction between what we are recommending here as a UPVC window is not what everyone might know of PVC vinyl windows. These are high performing, highly insulated, very durable, commercial grade windows that are some of the latest on the market and are the windows that, based on our calculation, will get us through the finish line with the new energy codes. Next, please. We went, Demis, who's on our team, did some exploration at the whatever is left remaining of the existing frames of the windows at the church. And he put some measuring tape around the frames of especially this monumental window and the other smaller windows along the nave. And we can report that what is left on the building currently has some significant dimension, being 6.5-inch jamb at the transept and close to 3-inch jamb at the nave windows that you can see here. And over the past month, we have been discussing and maybe doing some historical fact check with our preservation consultants and architects, Lynn Spencer and Doug Manley at SPG. And we were able to maybe trace back a little bit the history in New England about the muntins and the mullions. And based on some information we've discussed together, in the early 1700s and 1800s, when glass was expensive and workmanship was not very much refined, wood muntins were large. Then as the federal period and the more refined workmanship started to appear, we started seeing smaller frame profiles and muntin. However, and that's me not being a preservation architect, relying on my colleagues and being fascinated by this information, is finding that as building at the end of the 1900s started to employ larger pieces of glass, the muntins and the mullions started to become larger. And that's the building that we see here is an exact testimony to this. Layering on a little bit more is that some of these buildings, not possibly the Blessed Sacrament, the workmanship started to become less handcrafted and more machine made, which also lent itself into beefier profiled and larger frames and muntins. So when we put this building into context, and we look at what currently right now we think is the most appropriate for many to answer many questions about this building, we even feel stronger at the moment to advocate for a window that has wider profiles, muntins and mullions, which is the UPVC, has a better thermal performance and could get us closer to what historically this building had on its facade. We have to remember that the windows we're looking at right now are monumental windows. They are, this one is at 4 floor high and the other windows are of a double height. So even though they have the right proportion for us to see them as residential scale window, they are of a monumental scale, hence they lend itself to wider and thicker profiles and muntins that we will show you next in the next slides. Next, please. I will defer to, can we make Demis Schifero, our project manager, who, and Nicole Berger, if she's here, they'll speak better about the thermally performance of those windows that we would like to recommend. Demis, could you?
I unmuted Dennis and you said Nicole. I don't think I
see. I don't I think see Nicole.
Yeah, Nicole's... I think Nicole couldn't be here tonight.
Okay. Demis, could you speak to the energy model, please? You'll do a better job at it.
So this is a comparison of the two systems.
You have to unmute yourself.
So this is a comparison of the two systems, the aluminum and the UPVC, run the through the model. And as you can see, the aluminum windows performs less during a cooling requirement. And so the recommended window is a bottom one, which performs much better than the aluminum window.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, please. I think there was a request also from the commission and from members of the BPDA to really see them side by side with the same subdivision and the same operable size. How would the aluminum windows on the left-hand side would compare with the UPVC windows on the right-hand side? What we were able to achieve, and what I think Demis and our team worked hard with the UPVC manufacturers, is to be able to add a brick molding at the archway, at the frame of the windows, at the jamb. What we were not able to achieve, and we will show it in the next slide, is to have that brick mold go through the floor lines that currently is shown as a horizontal band between the two different floors. Next, please. This is a similar illustration of the monumental five-story high window between aluminum on the left-hand side and the UPVC on the right-hand side. And you can see that the brick mold really goes around each one of those openings, adding some more interest and more depth to the usually more known flatness of the UPVC window. Next. This is the spandrel element between the two floors that you see at the section. And we have worked with an insulated aluminum panel product and a careful attention to the detail about how this product meets the floor slab, trying to minimize the spandrel dimension as much as possible. And we were able to reduce it to 1'8". And based on previous discussions with the commission and with the BPDA, this spandrel panel will be of a darker color to match the color of the mullions of the windows themselves. And this is an illustration on the right-hand side of the elevation of how the subdivision is recommended to be and where the operables would be.
Next. So, Philippe, do you mind if I just add something? One of the things that we did ask for last time was that the brick mold did come all the way through. So I just want to make it clear that that's not happening. And
yes.
But the panel is back from the existing brick, which is, I think, what one of the concerns was, that it would be too far forward.
The panel will be back from the brick, yes. However, the final location is contingent on further exploration at the church, to be done at the church, really to understand how far back the brick goes. Okay. But you see it here in the detail.
Right.
But yes, the spandrel or the metal panel sits behind the brick facade. And to confirm what you said, Chelsea, yes, we've worked very hard to see if we could take the brick mold through, but the continuous thermally insulated system for the building that the building code requires us to do does not allow us to push the aluminum panels further back.
Okay. I just want to make that clear, and that it was back from the park. Thank you.
Demis, do you want to
push the windows further forward by, you know, I'm not sure what, an inch to get the brick mold to run?
Demis, go ahead.
So the existing window is there 2.5 inch or 4 inches recessed from the brick, the face of the brick. That for sure will maintain, but the exact location, as Philip mentioned, will need to be field verified.
But then, as Mr. Walker was asking, could we push the windows further out so that we can have the brick mold go through the aluminum panels?
So the brick mold is integral to the UPVC window. It's part of the system. And it cannot be applied on the aluminum panel.
Oh, you're saying it's, oh, okay.
It's a clip-on.
Yeah.
Thank you, Demis. It's a clip-on that attaches itself to the frame of the window. And if we bring it across, there will be nothing. We'll avoid the manufacturer warranty. There will be nothing to attach it to it.
What about if you push the windows back and fabricated a little custom piece that goes on either side of the aluminum panel? So not touching the windows themselves, but adding something special to the aluminum panel applied, not breaking a thermal seal or anything like that. I don't know if that would help.
We didn't look at that. There is so much our minds think about customization when we think about affordable housing. But we could look at the overall look at the building later on in the renderings that also you've requested. And we can maybe then make a determination if the small piece to be added as a custom piece to the aluminum panel is still necessary.
Okay. And I'm not, it might work, it might not.
Is the aluminum panel manufactured by the same company as the windows themselves?
No.
No.
Okay. So what do you think the probability would be of being able to customize an extrusion outside of the window manufacturer that would match?
Very low, because they use different products. One is a brick mold that is compatible with the UPVC windows. The other one is a metal panel that is pre-manufactured and pre-insulated and comes from a different. And when we go with darker colors, it's always very difficult to match blacks together, to be of different materials and to really match the color. So I am not very confident the solution, even if it's doable, would be successful from it. I know the commission wants to see this continuous line around the brick opening, but it might draw more attention to itself if we put a piece and then at one point of time, one gets discolored or faded in the sun more than the other. That's when we use two different products together, it's really difficult to match colors.
And is there any opportunity to have the brick mold completely independent of the window system? So it's something that could be almost applied after the fact, continuously around the perimeter, as kind of
standalone piece.
So that would need to be done by a third party.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we'll run into a problem physically attaching to the window or to the aluminum panel.
Sure.
It's going to be a warranty issue. Yes.
Thanks.
Thank you. Next.
Sure.
And this is a similar detail that we have done also for the 700 series, which is the aluminum window series. Then the next discussion we've had with the commission is that the side doors along Center Street, and a little bit more detail on those. And there was a request to add horizontal subdivisions to the side light of the door, which you can see here has been added and looks pretty in line with the doors and is very handsome and acceptable. There will be a grill on top of the door that still remains unchanged from the previous design that will match the door underneath. And then the existing metal grill will remain in place at the top of the opening. I want to remind everybody that the asymmetry of the door is because of accessibility. 36 inches have to be maintained as an accessible path for public access. Next. Mm-hmm. I think during the last meeting we've had with people, there was a desire to see how can we maintain and preserve these two doors, because they have to be decommissioned. They have to be removed. And there are two pieces of, if not mahogany, if not some darker cherry wood doors. There was a request that could we keep those doors open, propped up to the outside and remain in place, or at least in the same plane? And how can we resolve that? So this is a sketch of, in plan, how those two doors could remain propped open, pinned at 90 degrees, and then our new door, which is the one you've seen previously, will be inboard of these two doors propped open. The challenge that we found, and in consultation with SPGE here, is that first we have to remember that these doors are not going to remain in the same place. They are 6 feet higher currently. We're removing them from their hinges, dropping them down to the new ground floor. These doors are meant to be in an opening so that only the front of these doors will be exposed to the elements. Chelsea, there's a note from Mr. Barducci to unmute you. To unmute him. He needs to be unmuted. So when these doors are propped open, now in this new configuration, the face of the door that is always meant and designed to be inside the building will be continuously facing the elements. To be able to do this,
to be able to do this,
we would recommend, for the longevity of these doors, we would recommend either these doors are painted with an opaque finish, and at the same time, there's a metal flashing that should go at the top of the door to protect the cross grain of the wood elements as they will be propped open, receiving snow and wind and rain throughout the year. There's one more thing I would like to let the commission know is that currently those doors are compromised because they're panic hardware that's been installed on the inside of these doors that have damaged the frame that goes around these four circles. So if we prop them open, we will be exposing a compromised face of the doors. If we go to the next option, we looked at an option to say, what if the doors remained in place, but we push the new door more inboard, allowing for more flexibility in mounting these two elements together. This does not help in making the doors more durable. Still, we would recommend that these doors be painted and also a metal flashing be put on top. Our third option is actually the option that we would like to recommend to the commission. And I think it ticks many boxes, and it actually enhances the inside of the church. Rather than opening these doors propped open to the outside, we would like to open them to the inside. It will help us in a few things. First, the damaged, compromised side of the door would not be visible to the visitors. Number two, we won't have to paint them in an opaque finish. They will still remain in their natural wood finish. They will be inside the building permanently, so they will be more protected. And they will help with accessibility because they will not narrow the opening of the access path, as you've seen in the option one. So to us, this seems to be a win-win-win-win situation that preserves the doors almost in the right place, keeps the historic fabric, and then allows for accessibility and durability of these doors. Next. Another element that we would like to bring forward to the commission is the rose window in the front of, or the circular window in the front of the church is still in place. And we would like to maintain the original window. However, it's a very thin glass and will not meet the energy codes. So we would like to add a storm window on the outside, matching the, as you can see on the right-hand side, matching some of the mountains of the current circular window so that we can achieve the thermal insulation required for the energy codes. And then last is two elevations or three-dimensional renderings, one with the UPVC window that you see right here, which is the thicker profile. And then the next one is the with the aluminum windows that you can see here. And I think that is the end of our presentation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'll just start with getting back, or we'll start with the windows themselves that you started talking about first. we approved of the vinyl, I think, last time.
Okay.
And then I think what was, we're understanding that maybe there's some, the BPDA is actually suggested they would like to see the metal. Is that?
The BPDA further asked why metal, why the aluminum were not doable. And we've run the energy models and we have actually, to their response, minimized the mullions so that the thickness of the mullions is less occurring. And that's the new subdivisions that we are presenting to you all today.
Mm-hmm. Less on the vinyl, you're saying?
For both.
Yeah.
We are lessening the amount of subdivisions inside the windows to minimize the mullions overall.
All right. And then on this this area where we were talking about having the brick mold go through, that you said you can't do because it'll void the warranty of the windows. And you have you're just saying you're going to be having a vinyl panel. Is that?
No, what is it's that? An aluminum. It's an
or insulated. I'm sorry, the aluminum rather. Yeah. So, yes. But what is the color? I mean, I'm seeing on the rendering you're showing the windows having a darkish color, but then
yes,
is it? Are they dark or is it going to be white or what?
We are recommending a dark bronze window and panel to be exactly the same color of one another, so that this plane has a similar color. Yes.
That band going through is going to be
yes.
the same as the as
the same color as the windows.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. The original windows before they were changed, was this brick going through or not in that place?
Where the aluminum panel is?
Yes, yes.
No, this was first, we have images. The top windows, the top windows were just one openings.
Yeah, okay, so it was open.
The bottom.
So the idea of adding a brick mold through it is going to be something that was never there.
No, anyway, it was, so, yeah. No.
And I think what it's going to do, certainly to the top windows, it will interrupt that more, and it'll make it look like two very separate windows, one
yes,
arch
yes.
window at the top. And
I agree.
And I think keeping it the same color as the muntins of the window is the way to go. And I think typically, you know, this rendering shows those windows, the glass itself, as a light color. During the day, if those windows look black, darkish anyway,
yes,
they're
yes.
not going to look white. So that will be further camouflage that horizontal band. So I think it's fine
exactly.
to go with that. okay, so then you started with the door,
yeah.
the side door. And I think it's actually an interesting idea of holding on to those doors, the original doors, and then having them swing in. I know we had a similar issue with the Christian Science when they had the original doors, and we were trying to figure out what to do with them because they could not use those anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I know one scenario was the possibility of having them open in, and ultimately we couldn't do that. But in this case, you think you can do that, and it's not going to impair the flow into the in and out of the door, and it could work for you.
I think we did this as a study, and we think it's going to work.
And then they would be, the intention is that they're permanently open. They're not going
That's
to be
right.
able to That's be right. closed.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, I think it's certainly a better idea solution than to store them somewhere and at least that they're there. And then the reminder of what was originally there probably is a good thing. So, regarding the doors, the new doors and the upper portion, is that, again, the upper portion of the doors where you have those long horizontals, are those, remind me of what, I can't quite read this. Is that glass infill or what?
This will be glass infilled, yes.
It will be glass,
it will be opaque. It will have the glass reflectivity, but we're going to backpaint those so that, because there are things we don't want to see behind.
Right, so that will be what, black, opaque? Essentially,
yes.
And then the doors themselves. I mean, I think this solution for the doors, I think is fine. The way you've shown it.
Thank you.
I think the whole overall composition of the opening is looks good. The rose window, storm window, though, I'm very concerned about that, and. I'm not sure how close will the storm window itself be to the actual surface of the rose window, roughly.
Demis, did you?
Oh, is that in this section here?
It's this section right there. So it's fairly close. From this section, it seems it's within. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's directly mounted on the existing window frame.
Okay.
It's pretty close.
Mm-hmm. Well, my eye gets really, it disrupts the whole thing because this is not an equally divided light with the, 6 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 9 o'clock divisions. And you're going with this sort of skewed position of the four muntins here. I almost feel like maybe you need to do every one of them so that it's not as disruptive, because I think it's going to be very sort of strangely visible to see this off-kilter position on the storm window, and wondered if you went and did every one of them. And the fact that if it was close enough to the rose window itself, and I'm guessing it would these be dark, or would they be light to match what's there now on the rose window?
I think the plan is to do all fenestration colored in the same color. Like this would be painted dark.
So it would be painted as well. Dark. I'm just trying to get as much of the rose window, the original rose window, visible. But I'd be interested in what the other commissioners feel about if you did every one of the ones around the clock dial, so to speak. You can leave the center, right? You can leave the center open. That does not have to have muntins coming in. It just would be that outer band, correct?
Demis, this is a custom window, so we could add a few more of those radiuses. Yes,
we could.
Yeah,
The break is done because of the size of the window. It's just extensive. It's more than 8 feet.
Yeah,
so we need some sort of divisions. But as you suggested, maybe doing every mantine or every other mantine to make it a little bit more regular would probably make sense.
Yeah. Or all of them,
Or all of them, yeah.
All of them.
Yeah, so that'd be 10, basically, right? As you go around. So I think that's what I feel about it. I'd be curious or happy to hear what the other two commissioners feel about that. So that's kind of the extent of my comments. Brad or Justine, do you have anything you want to add?
Well, if we want to stay on this window in particular, so the storm frame at that head detail, that's going to cut into the glass opening. Am I understanding the relationship of that detail correctly?
Demis? Could you repeat the question? Sorry about that.
No problem. So is the storm window impeding on the glass opening around the perimeter frame?
No.
Not really. The existing frame is much thicker than the size of the mantis, pretty much similar to the transept window that Philip was discussing earlier.
So Justine, in the little section detail, I think the original window is the one on the right, and the storm is
correct. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm reading the label below it.
It's okay.
I'm thinking it's labeled. I'm sorry. Okay, I see. Wait.
So, yes. So the larger profile is the existing window, and the skinny one on the left hand side is the storm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So. Is there any other approach than the storm window to meet your energy codes here?
Replacing the window altogether and putting a new window that will not match this thin profiles that we have. Which this is one of the windows that remain in the church.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we looked at also the option of reglazing the existing mantine, but they are very thin and they cannot accommodate an insulated panel.
Right.
And you've looked at an interior storm and you're worried about thermal condensation.
Correct. That's correct.
Yes.
And this is too large to do one storm so that there aren't competing mullions on each layer.
Right. Yes. Correct. I think this is more than 8 feet and we couldn't span.
Correct.
More than 8 feet.
Okay.
This might be a crazy question, but are there storms that are not made of glass that are clear plastic that would work here?
Our experience with fiberglass, plastic or plexiglass is that they look good on day one.
Yeah.
And with the elements and the sand and any, like, they will get etched and then they'll become, with the sun, they'll start fading and cracking.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You have any thoughts, Justine, on the other portions?
I agree with David, your comments on the incorporation of the original doors at the front entrance. I think the storm window is a little unfortunate, but don't have a alternate solution or idea to offer either. So
I'll work through with my thoughts backwards since the slides are starting here. What is the space behind this window, this rose window?
It's the stairs. It's an egress stair for the residential units upstairs.
Good. I would like to suggest that you consider asking for an historic exemption from full compliance with the energy code on this element. It's probably not a matter of comfort if it's the egress stair. It's not someone's living room. And that's available to you. I think any storm window, no matter how carefully detailed, is on such a prominent location, front and center on this building, is going to be, it's going to obscure this, the beauty of this window, the delicacy of its montans. And as David observed in talking about the nave windows, the glass is going to, you know, reflect black. And then if you're going to put black subdivisions on the glass, it's just going to look like a big black circle instead of this quite beautiful expression that you're showing in the photograph. So my first request would be that you find a workaround and don't put a storm window on this. You're going to comply with the rest of the energy code, and there are avenues for you to avail yourself of to get that workaround.
Brad, if I could just interject, I just had a thought while we're still on this window. The applicant mentioned that when the plexiglass was suggested that it would obviously weather and get cloudy and such over time with the elements. Is this a possibility to take and have an interior storm, but have that interior storm be plexiglass? There, then that would not be open to the elements. You could get away with not having, I assume you would be able, to have no separations, no muntins. And it would give you the thermal protection that you're looking for. Is that something that could be considered?
The issue with the interior storm, Demis, correct me if I'm wrong, is our envelope consultant is recommending against this because of condensation, no matter what they are, whether it's plexiglass or glass or anything else, there is a risk of creating condensation on inside storms.
So that would be my, you know, sort of plan A is seek the historic exemption, in my view. Plan B would be, in either case, you're proposing two layers of glass. So I think there might be a solution for the condensation between the two layers of glass. So my plan B would be work to solve that condensation problem with an interior storm. And the request would be to come back to us with one of those two for me.
Would the commission be okay if the storm window is white?
So I'm going to stay with what I said, which is no.
Yeah.
Okay. I think any storm window here is going to be a serious detriment to this resource. And I think there are other avenues available to you to not do that. Okay. If we could scroll up,
yeah.
I think the next one up is the pinning of the doors. I agree with your analysis and the other commissioner's comments that the open position is certainly preferable to the outward position. I want to make sure I'm clear. Are the wood doors taller than the new bronze colored doors?
Looks like they, I think so.
We will check that. I can see what you see. We will check that. They should be of the same height.
Well, I'm sorry, what was the question? What was the comment or the comment?
The question is, are the wood doors, I mean, in these photograph or the photograph and the rendering, although they are of different proportions, I'm curious, are the wood doors the same height as the bronze doors?
Oh, as the new doors?
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I see. You think the old ones might be bigger?
They look much taller, there's some proportionality going on there that I'm not
following. Yeah.
Well, let me also make this general comment about the doors. We definitely will find a way to keep these doors one way or another. So, you know,
we understand that.
Yeah. So if we can't, I was just getting back to David's point. If for some reason we got into the field and this existing, you know, where Philippe's got them doesn't work for some reason, we'll come back to you with another option of where we put them. So just to
make that clear. Just looking to approve as much as we can for you tonight.
I appreciate that.
So maybe the proviso would be, you know, provided they're at the same height, and if you find out they're not, then you need a different plan and come back to us. I'm also curious, when I look at your plan and the sort of red lines added to the plan that look like maybe thickening of the wall, could you detail your jams or else that padding out of the wall, which maybe is for insulation purposes? Can you detail this so those doors actually pin open a little wider?
More close to 180 than
more close to 180 than 90.
Right. If they were to kind of fold back into a pocket.
Well, that would be lovely because then it would make sense. Yeah. So maybe something like that would work.
Yeah. Or folding against the wall would be better because you're providing this weird little sort of pocket.
Well, that's what Chelsea's saying. Fold back into a place meant to receive them. Mm-hmm. And then you don't have to worry about people seeing the unpleasant surface at all.
Yeah. We could try that.
Okay, and while we're, I'm going to make one comment here. While we're still on the doors here, are the new doors, those are going to be custom doors, correct?
Yes.
All right, so can we then make, if we're concerned about the parallel of heights, measure the old door and make the new door fit it?
Yes, yes. So that that's the intent. That's the intent, yes, absolutely.
Okay.
So we could say that as a proviso. Yeah. And are you comfortable with us asking that you find a way to pin those doors open, or should we call it 180 degrees, and come back to us if you can't?
I think yes.
Yeah, yes,
we can do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we're good with that.
We should do that.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. And then if you'd scroll back up a little more, the first topic. There's a topic here also about the vertical subdivisions in the bronze door transom that we asked you to come back with. And I appreciate that you come back with that, and I think that's an improvement. So thank you for that.
Sure.
I am sorry that the brick mold can't bridge across the spandrel in either option. This is one of those places where we have to take your word for it. We don't have the resources to do this research. And I listened carefully to your analysis of thinner versus heavier subdivisions. And I think one could probably make an argument either way. We've already approved the UPVC, and I don't particularly want to go back on that. But I would be comfortable also approving the aluminum and leaving that choice to you and the other authorities that you need to seek the approval of.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you. That's very helpful.
Chelsea, go back to where you were. The windows themselves, you've got indicating that they're going to be operable, at least one on each of the upper and lower.
Yes.
I'm going to guess that the operable windows will further add to the thickness.
Yes.
Because it looks like the aluminum ones look to be fairly narrow, but then on the PVC ones, it looks like that's going to be a thicker.
It sort of doubles up in the detail at the operable part.
Yeah.
So that will be a much more noticeable feature of the window. I don't know what to say about that. I assume that that's part of the requirements that you're looking to do to have those be workable windows. And are they actually going to be opening both ways, or is that an option for them to open?
So these windows will open in.
Oh, they're all in. Okay.
The aluminum windows will open out, I think.
Right.
The UPVC windows are made inherently to open in. So I think even though it not doubles up, but thickens the frame around the operable, it's inset from the face of the frame.
Right.
So it might be a little bit more favorable. It opens in.
The visual reading that will have strength is actually the insect screen as a change in the reflectivity of the surface
would
be the prominent thing to worry about or to acknowledge rather than change in thickness of muntins.
Yes, you're correct.
There's really no getting around that unless you had crank out casements with insect screens inside.
Which you do with the aluminum.
Is that right?
I think these aluminum windows open out. Is that right?
The aluminum windows open out, correct, yes.
So any insect screen would be inside.
So to me, that's a significant advantage of the aluminum because those insect screens on the exterior are going to have a very strong reading. It's very much at odds with
the
vocabulary of this building.
Yeah, when the window is shut, for sure, the screen will be, it won't have the same shine.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, so that seems to be, we seem to be getting closer to,
but
preferring the metal here, the aluminum.
Can I make the argument that this is a residential building and people will have their windows open sometimes, which will also break this plane of glass?
And I think that's okay. I mean, obviously, that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But the the screen's going to be there all the time on the outside.
Yeah.
So I am comfortable essentially approving both, leaving our approval of the UPVC in place, also approving the aluminum, and you guys can fight that out with the BPDA.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate you saying that. I wouldn't say it's a fight. The issue is right now the aluminums don't meet the energy sustainability, and they also are significantly more expensive. That's a secondary issue we can work and try to figure out, but right now it's a sustainability issue. So
I understand there's some discussion about which version of the stretch code you feel like you need to comply with. Is that correct?
Yes. Understanding? I know the city, I think there's some folks here from the city of the BPDA. I think there's some discussion about trying to see if there can be some flexibility on that, which would help us.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know if she wants to say anything because I didn't prepare her for this, but Ava is here, BPDA. So if she, I did make you a co-host, Ava, if you want to say anything.
Oh.
Hi, I'm happy to speak. I'm actually with the Mayor's Office of Housing. I just liaise closely with BPDA for coordinated design review between the two groups. We have, verbal and vague written confirmation from ISD that these energy code changes would not apply to this project, but we don't have anything in writing, which I know the development team wants, which is why we are just hoping for flexibility at this point so that we can work details later on, as you have discussed already. Thank you.
That'd be perfect. Thank you.
Thanks, Ava. Sorry, I got your department.
Oh, no, it's okay. I totally understand why you thought that.
So I'm curious if the other commissioners would support me, especially on the rose window conversation, or whether we need to kind of keep talking about that.
I'll jump in on if you don't. I think that's a great. I'm not that happy with the storms on the outside. So I'd love to keep looking and taking a look at that. If there's other things we can come up with.
Right. So thank you.
Yeah.
And it would seem that if you do the inside, I would still want to see less of the muntin. So that would then include using a PV or a plexiglass.
Let us try to dig into that a little bit more.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Yeah. All right, I think that's the way to go. So, all right, is that it for comments? We can open it up to the public then. So Chelsea, if you can give me my handy dandy script here.
Sorry, I didn't put it in the right place.
Actually, just real quick, Chelsea, before we open that up, I think I'm confused on how we're leaving the rose window and the storm. Is it part one or step one is going to be looking into energy code relief? And then the second is maybe an interior option, plexiglass, what have you. Is that how we're writing this up?
Yeah,
okay. I would say that could be the request verbally today, but the proviso would just be please return.
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
On the rose window.
So my script is
David,
up here.
You're,
okay, yeah. I'm just, wait a minute, at the bottom of the screen, are you sure? Do you have it all up here, Chelsea?
Do you need to read the whole thing for public comment? I'm sorry, I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I usually do. So, this isn't it either. This is the opening. So why don't we just list it where we're open for public comment. How's that?
I think this part we can read.
It's not typical, but we'll go for it. During the public comment period for each application, if you'd like to speak during, please use the raise your hand function to in Zoom so staff can unmute attendees. We ask the participants limit their comments to under 2 minutes so that others may participate in the discussion. If you require assistance during the hearing, please email staff at blc@boston.gov. All right.
I'm not seeing any hands raised in our meeting, and I'm checking the email.
Mm-hmm. All right, so nothing coming through. If that's the case, we can close public comment. And if one of the commissioners would like to make a motion, or not a motion, but to just say what we will then, what our motion will be to the full commission.
And I just jotted down some notes. I'm happy to do it. Yep. On the nave windows, our prior approval of the UPVC windows remains in place. And we would also approve the proposed aluminum windows. On the doors,
Can I add something to that, Brad? What we actually asked the applicant to do was come to us with the section detail. So we need to say that we approve of that section detail in either case.
Okay.
Okay.
So we would approve the section detail of the aluminum windows. On the doors in the side light, the side aisles of the church, we're asking, I think it's an approval and the provisos are confirmed that the heights of the new door and the old door match.
Should match.
And confirm that you can pin the doors open inward 180 mm-hmm. degrees. And I think we can say we'd remand that to staff to confirm those understandings. Mm-hmm. And the rose window, I think you've heard our opinions mm-hmm. and suggestions, but yeah. we'd like you to return with a different option.
Okay.
Okay.
I was not clear about the section of aluminum windows. I thought that's included in the presentation.
It is. I think what Chelsea's saying is we had specifically asked to see the section, and so that's what we would be.
Okay. Which you did. You did show us that. So yes, we're
approving.
But we're approving the section that you showed for UPVC and for aluminum, depending on what you end up with.
All right. Thanks.
And then in terms of, they will tell you, Chelsea. Would you want them to tell you which one is ultimately going to be used?
Yeah, I guess that. It could just be a recommendation that they let us know, and I can let you all know. But I think approving both is the right way to go. It gives them the most flexibility.
Okay. Yes. And I'm just trying to think what the issue of the opening window and the screen, and that is going to, well, if it's going to be what it's going to be, if we go with the, if they go with the vinyl, the presence of that screen will always be there in all seasons. But all right. So it's, that will be the issue, whatever one they decide. So there's no option, in other words, for that. Okay. I guess that's it then. So we'll wait till, what is it? We got for time here.
About almost an hour.
Oh yeah, an hour. Wow.
Almost 5:07. Break.
All right.
Chelsea, just remind everyone that 10 Melville, if members of the public are here for 10 Melville, it's been withdrawn.
That's right.
Oh, yep. Okay.
Thank Great. You. Pause the recording and we'll see you in a little bit. Thank you.
Great. Thanks. Thank you. We'll see you in an hour.
Thanks.
You want to flip me to the next slide, Chelsea? Yeah.
Here you go.
All right. I am calling to order a meeting of the Boston Landmarks Commission on June 27th at 6:02 p.m. I am Brad Walker, which I will say only because I'm new at the chairmanship, and so people might not know who I am. With us tonight are Commissioners Freeman, Orlando, Gagonian, Baraducci, Smilage, and Hoffman. Did anyone else join in the last couple of seconds?
Not yet.
I also would like to just acknowledge staff members who are present because they're often speaking, and I want to make sure people in the public know who's speaking. So we have Chelsea Blanchard, who is staff architect to the Boston Landmarks Commission, Joe Cornish, director of design review, Roseanne Foley, who is the executive director of the Boston Landmarks Commission, I think I saw that Murray Miller, who is the director of the Office of Historic Preservation, is also on the call. Welcome. Nice to meet you.
Thank you. Nice to meet you as well.
Dorothy is not here. Anyone else?
Not tonight.
Okay. I'm going to read the next part. You can participate in this hearing by going to the Zoom meeting link posted in our agenda online at https://zoom.us/j931722170 or by calling 301-715-8592 and entering the meeting ID 931-722-47460. You can also submit written comments to us by email at blc@boston.gov. In accordance with the Commonwealth of Massachusetts executive order suspending certain provisions of the open meeting law, including the July 16th, 2022 amendment, extending the suspension of these provisions until March 31st, 2023, and I think beyond, we are conducting this meeting online to ensure public access to the deliberations of the Boston Landmarks Commission. The public may access this call through telephone and video conferencing. This hearing is being recorded. All conversations between commissioners should be audible to the public in attendance until the meeting has been adjourned. If there are any media or elected officials present, I would like to ask you to identify yourself now by stating your name, title, and affiliation. You will have to probably raise your hand in order for you to be unmuted.
I see one person. Councillor Coletta is with us. So I will unmute her. So Councillor Coletta.
Hi, good afternoon or evening, everybody. I'm just here to speak on the Nazaro Center. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I see that Commissioner Hotelli has also joined us.
And Henderson.
And Henderson, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Chelsea, I do see one other person raising their hand, Luigi Natale.
Oh, I'm sorry. Great. Luigi, you should be able to unmute yourself now.
Hi, how are you? My name is Luigi Natale from State Representative Aaron Michalowicz's office, and I'm here for the Nazaro Center.
Good to have you.
All right, I'm going to start by reading the agenda into the record. The first item we're going to deal with tonight is the review of items that were reviewed earlier this evening by the Design Review Subcommittee. There will be a vote to approve those. The second is, I'm skipping ahead, sorry. A lot of administrative reviews. Then we have a petition and a study report to review and accept public comment on for the Nazaro Center in the North End. We will review and ratify minutes of the public hearing meetings on
May 23rd
and
6/13.
Yep. Great. Staff updates and then projected adjournment is at 8 p.m. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Design Review Subcommittee Chair Baraducci.
I'm going to interrupt you for 1 second, Brad. Yep, David, just to say that the application for 10 Melville Ave has, the rebuilding of the carriage house has been postponed. So if you're here for that application, you don't need to come and you will be notified when it will reoccur.
Okay, thank you. So we actually had just with that Melville Avenue having been taken off the agenda, we had this just the one on the, and that was application 22.1280. And this was 361 Center Street, the Blessed Sacrament Church in Jamaica Plain. This was, they came back before us today. Based on the February 28, 2023 hearing, where we asked them to come in with more detailed section of the new windows. We asked to see the addition of some horizontal muntins on the side lights where the new doors were going to be put in the front, and also to address the issue of what to do with those original wood doors. So we did, this was the section that they came back with our request to show us. It was a vinyl window that was approved last time. And since this, we approved this section, but also since this, the BPDA, when they saw this, they had asked if they could look at an aluminum window. And so both of these windows were presented again to us tonight. And so basically we are approving of both. And then whichever way it ends up going, whether it's the aluminum or the vinyl, based on any input from BPDA, they will have this approval in place. All right, so now the other part was the upper portion of this is the new doors they're going to have to put. They're removing the original wood doors that are there. And replacing them with this single door and a side light. They can't use two double doors because they wouldn't be large enough openings for them. So that was already approved. We asked them to come back to us with introduction of these horizontal muntins to help break up the size of that glass, which they did, and we approved that. The last piece here was the what to do with the interior wood doors. So we at least asked them to save them and store them on site. They came back with this. They came back with this idea, and this is what we are going. We approve basically this direction. They're looking at instead to change the swing of the doors. Instead of swinging out, they would swing in and permanently be kept in this open position on the inside of the building. That way, it will always be understood what was the original door and they will be taken care of being in this position. So we were happy to see that. And then they will size the new door correspondingly to match the height of the wood door so that that would be a seamless transition. So the motion would be to approve what they submitted. And this was the rose window. Is the original window, and it still remains. And the issue is they needed to provide thermal protection from that, and which meant then the introduction of a storm window. They came to us tonight with this option of putting a storm window because it's a large opening, it's an 8-foot diameter. They had to introduce muntins to structurally support it. And as you can see from the rendering, it was an awkward placement of the muntins because it's not a symmetrical division. So they were proposing basically doing these sort of awkward wings that wouldn't be symmetrical. So anyway, we talked about several solutions. We asked about the possibility of doing a plexiglass sheet instead, and that for obvious reasons, when it's exposed to the elements, that gets pitted and checked, and it eventually gets cloudy. So what we've asked them to do was, the first solution would be to try and get an exemption for this window, and to, in terms of their seeking of the energy credits, and get an exemption for this window being a historic property, so they wouldn't have to have the need for a storm window. The second option, if that is not going to be able to be done, that would be then to introduce a storm window on the inside, and that would be then be able to be a plexiglass sheet that could be the full span of the 8 feet. And they said that they were concerned because their engineer had said that there was an issue that might happen with condensation, and so we asked them to just flush that out to find out what could be done to prevent that from happening. But that would be the second choice should they not be able to get the exemption. So that is the motion to accept those pieces that I just spoke about. And so we need a second on that.
A second.
All right.
All commissioners voting. Commissioner Freeman.
Yes.
Commissioner Henderson.
Yes.
Commissioner Orlando.
Yes.
Commissioner Gagonian.
Yes.
Commissioner Beriducci.
Yes.
Commissioner Smilage?
Yes.
Commissioner Hotelling?
Yes.
Commissioner Hoffman?
Yes.
And I vote yes.
All right, and then the next, we have a whole series of administrative reviews. These were applications that came before the, or presented to the Landmark staff, and they determined that they had met the criteria of the standards and criteria in the study reports, and they gave an approval to them. And so our vote in the end, or the motion and the vote at the end, would be to approve of their findings after I read them all in. First is application 23.1126, says 89 Broad Street, and this is regarding a leak investigation behind 12th floor masonry and in-kind repair of masonry. Next, 23.11129, this is 221 Columbus Avenue in Boston, and the proposed work is replace metal windows in-kind to match the existing. Next, 231099, this is 50 Post Office Square in Boston. The work is general exterior window repair and repair all walls. Next, 23.1096, the 2 Boylston Street in Boston. And the work is exterior window bird-proofing, hardware repairs in kind. Next, 23.2095, 33 Union Street in Boston. And this is regarding the exterior brick, stone, and slate repairs to address structural issues and water infiltration. All replacement of material will be in kind to match the existing. Next, 23.2094, 25 Union Street, Boston. The work is exterior brick, stone, and slate repairs to address structural issues and water infiltration. All replacement of materials will be in kind to match existing. Next, 23.2094, 17 Union Street, in Boston. The work is exterior brick, stone, and slate repairs to match structural issues and water infiltration. All replacement of materials will be in kind to match the existing. This next application, that same level of work, so I won't have to read that all in, but this is application 23.2094, 12 Marshall Street in Boston. And the next was 23.2091, 108 Blackstone Square in Boston, and the proposed work is exterior wall repairs, including wood window repair, displaced brick masonry rebuilding, and loose masonry removal to address structural issues and water infiltration. All replacement materials will be in kind to match the existing. Next, 23.1071, the Charles River Esplanade in Boston. The work is exterior condensers installed and painted to match existing background materials in the rear of the hatch shell. Next is, and the last here is application 23.1086, and this is 11 School Street in Boston, and the work is brick and concrete repairs at street level to match existing conditions. So again, the motion is to accept the staff's approval of these.
I'll make a motion.
Okay, and we need a second.
Justine, I think David made the motion, so you can second.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Okay, second.
All right, all commissioners voting again. Commissioner Freeman?
Yes.
Commissioner Henderson?
Yes.
Commissioner Orlando?
Yes.
Commissioner Goganian?
Yes.
Commissioner Baraducci?
Yes.
Commissioner Smilage?
Yes.
Commissioner Hotelling?
Yes.
Commissioner Hoffman?
Yes.
And I vote yes.
Thank you.
So next up is the discussion of the study report for the Nazzaro Center. I think we're going to start. Roseanne, are you going to just read the public notice into the record for this?
Yes, sure.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. On June 6th, 2023, the Boston Landmarks Commission has posted a study report on the proposed designation of the Nazzaro Community Center in Boston's North End as a landmark under Chapter 772 of the Acts of 1975 as amended.
So the Boston Landmarks Commission is required to hold a public hearing on all proposed designations following the completion of a Landmark Commission study report. The purpose of this hearing of the potential designation is to present the findings of the study report, to hear testimony from interested parties, and to acquire information which will help the commission in making a decision after the hearing. the commission provides 3 weeks notice of the hearing to property owners and to abutters if the proposed designation is of an individual landmark, as this one is.
The definition of a landmark, as found in Chapter 772 of the Acts of 1975, as amended, is any physical feature or improvement designated by the commission in accordance with Section 4 as a physical feature or improvement, which in whole or part has historical, social, cultural, architectural, or aesthetic significance to the city and the Commonwealth, the New England region, or the nation. I will now read a summary from the study report on the Nazaro Community Center, North End, Boston, Mass. The Nazaro Community Center, previously called the North Bennett Street Public Bathhouse and Gymnasium, was constructed in 1906 to 1908 and opened in 1910. Designed in 1903 by the Boston-based architectural firm of McGinnis, Walsh, and Sullivan, the building is an exceptional early example of, exceptional example of early 20th century Beaux-Arts Renaissance Revival style architecture with its detailed ornamentation indicative of the arts and craft movement. The city of Boston constructed the building as one of 12 municipally run bathhouses in response to an 1895 public health policy. New public health policies mandated around the United States sought to address the effects of industrialization, urbanization, and poverty by providing public access to bathing and recreational facilities. Situated in the heart of the North End section of Boston, the Nazaro Community Center, with the adjacent Polcari Park at 45 Prince Street, established in 1897 as Prince Street Playground, served the area's growing immigrant population in the early 20th century.
Thank you very much. At this time, may I ask that any legal counsel representing any participant in this hearing to please identify yourself for the record. Again, you will probably have to raise your hand to be unmuted if you're not unmuted already. Don't think we're seeing anybody.
I can see, and no emails.
Okay. So we will now take testimony from people in the following order. First from elected officials, then from Boston Planning and Development Agency and the Massachusetts Historical Commission, who have statutory review responsibility, then from the property owner, then from those speaking or submitting written testimony at the hearing in support of designation, then from those speaking or submitting written testimony at the hearing in opposition to designation, then from those who wish to comment, not necessarily in support or opposition to designation, and finally from anyone with questions or rebuttals on the testimony. If you wish to speak, please state your name and address and your relationship to the property, if there is a relationship, such as owner or user of the proposed landmark or a budding or nearby owner or resident, a representative of a public agency or local organization or interest group, or an individual offering a professional opinion. The commission may direct questions to other speakers. I will ask that others hold their questions and any rebuttals until everyone has had the opportunity to speak. I will remind you to be brief and try not to repeat comments that other people have said, have already made. Again, you may have to raise your hand, but let's start with any comments from elected officials or their representatives.
So we have Gabriella Coletta. Councillor Coletta, I think you are unmuted, so you can go ahead.
Okay, just confirming you all can hear me.
Yes.
Beautiful. I am here tonight in partnership with my neighbors in the North End, my constituents in the North End. I am proud to represent Eastie, Charlestown, and the North End on the Boston City Council. I am here to support the designation of the Nazaro Center as a historical landmark. I was listening to Roseanne earlier about what categorizes a landmark, and it's the historical significance. And there's no doubt about it, this building has a huge significance to the North End and also to the city of Boston. It's located in the middle of the neighborhood. It was mentioned it's in the heart of the neighborhood, and it has been the heartbeat of the community and a gathering spot in the North End, first as a public bathhouse and then to many children and young adults as a community center. It is significant on the regional and local levels. I do agree with everything that was said in the report. I got a chance to review it ahead of time. And just want to commend the staff of the Boston Landmarks Commission for their recommendations. And I also want to thank the public and the advocates, Ellen Hume, David Kubiak. There's a lot of you on this call. So just thank you so much for your advocacy. And I do support the Nazaro Center as being designated as a landmark, and would encourage everybody on the commission to vote in favor of it. Thank you.
Yeah. And then we have Luigi Natale.
Yep. Good evening, everybody. My name is Luigi Natale, and I'm here on behalf of Representative Aaron Michaelowitz. He'd like to be on record in support. We were able to procure $5 million in state funding to rehabilitate the building, but the city would need to meet two requirements in order to access these funding. The building is declared a landmark as one of them, and two, the building will be occupied by a nonprofit organization, which will benefit the community. I know there's been two North End nonprofits that already showed interest, New Health and NEMPAC. Their plans would provide much needed services to the seniors in the neighborhood, as well as space for the performing arts for our youth. Thank you.
Great.
Okay, is there anyone here from the Boston Planning and Development Agency or the Massachusetts Historical Commission? Seeing any hands.
Yeah.
Again, you do need to raise your hand to be unmuted. Is there anyone here representing the property owner? Okay. Anyone would like to speak or submit written testimony this evening in support of designation? Ellen Hume.
Yep, Ellen. Ellen, you can go ahead and unmute yourself and start your video if you'd like.
Hi, everyone. Thank you. I have submitted testimony, so I will be extremely brief because I respect the time of this commission. First of all, my neighbors and I have been working for nearly 5 years on this project, and we could not be more thrilled with your study report, and we're so grateful. We know the Landmarks Commission staff are overburdened. It was hard during COVID especially, and we just want to say thank you, and especially Roseanne and Lynn and Kirsten and all of you who've done so much. I wanted to say that the study report has a particularly elegant sentence that I really want to applaud. The building has always been a dedicated public space serving as a center of community, heritage recognition, and sense of place. We are all working together to keep it so. And while it wasn't mentioned in the study report, I'd like to add that the original North End bathhouse, which is what this was renamed in the modern era for the late Michael Nazaro, a local North Ender who worked to preserve his neighborhood's historic buildings during a time of urban renewal. So it's in his spirit that we gathered some 1,500 signatures that started the process with two petitions. And I just wanted to say a special thank you and shout out to Kirsten Hoffman, Marie Simboli, Aaron Michaelowitz, Lydia Edwards, who was with us from the beginning, and certainly Gabriella Coletta, who came today. We want to thank you all, Tom Herman, North End Waterfronts Association, North End Waterfront City Council. And one last note, that the Boston Architectural College, at Lydia Edwards' suggestion, in a pro bono way, provided sketches for how we could keep the landmark beauty of this special building while repurposing it for the music and performing arts, for the health center, for everyone. And so it was really a joint project of many nonprofits and neighbors. And with that, I just want to applaud you and say thank you so much. This is really important to all of us. And thank you.
Ellen, for our record, would you let us know if you have any kind of, are you representing an agency or a community group or your relationship to the building?
Well, we founded something called Save the Nazaro, and we have a website, savethenazaro.org. And our whole purpose was literally the thing we're talking about today. So once we've gotten this designation and the city council and everybody have approved it, we can probably go back and try to do something else for our community. But that's been a focus of our efforts so far. We didn't raise any money. No one's paying us. We're not lawyers. We're just ordinary people. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak in support? Anyone wishing to speak in opposition?
So, Brad, before you move on, could I just say, in addition to Ellen's great testimony that we will add to our files, we received other letters of support. So, including Tom DiMiglia, president of the North End Historical Society. And the Mass Historical Commission also sent a letter supporting the recommendation of the Nazaro Center as a landmark.
Thank you. Anyone else on the call now wishing to speak in opposition? And Roseanne, is there any are there any letters in the file in opposition?
There are not.
Okay. Just to go through the motion, anyone wishing to comment, not necessarily in support or opposition. And anyone with questions or rebuttals on the testimony this evening? All right. Questions from commissioners to anyone who has spoken? Great. All right. Well, that concludes.
I have a comment. I just have a comment. So I second everything Ellen said, and I think the thing that's really impressive here is the work by the community, by the Landmarks Commission staff, by a lot of the organizations in the North End community, by the city, and by our state, by our elected officials. We've gone through, you know, a few terms during the community's work on this project, but I think the result of all that cooperation is going to be a very special building in the North End that will be preserved, not only because it's a landmark, but because it will be used for a public use. And I just think that's incredible.
Thank you. So that does conclude the testimony we'll take tonight, and we will now review the next steps in this process. Roseanne?
So written statements may be submitted tonight or until 3 working days following the hearing to the Boston Landmarks Commission, 20 City Hall Avenue, Boston, Mass. 02108, as required by the BLC's regulations. Letters may be sent to blc@boston.gov. An extension of time for submitting written testimony may be granted at the chair's discretion. The public record of the hearing is available upon advance request to BLC staff.
All right, thank you. Given the relative lack of controversy in the testimony tonight, I think we'll stick with this coming Friday, June 30th, 2023 at 5 p.m. As the deadline for the commission to accept further written testimony. When that period for submittal of written testimony ends, the hearing will be closed. After the close of the hearing, staff and the chair will review the hearing record, including additional written testimony, in preparation to schedule a discussion and vote on the designation at a future commission meeting date. Any potential amendments to the study report will be noted. Amendments may be drafted by the staff or by the commission at the chair's discretion. Any potential amendments, as well as the date for discussion and vote by the commission, will be posted in advance at boston.gov/landmarks. For more information, feel free to contact the Boston Landmarks Commission staff at blc@boston.gov. So that concludes that agenda item. And we move on to review and ratification of public hearing minutes. At first from May 23rd, I noted a couple of things to Chelsea prior to the meeting. Did anyone else have anything? I see Commissioner Henderson.
I just note that I was listed as present on the 23rd and I was not.
Thank you.
I got that. And we're just so used to you being here. Reliably.
Well, thank you.
Any other comments on that one? Is there a motion to accept?
I'll move to accept the meeting minutes.
Second.
A second.
Thank you, David. I think still all commissioners voting. Commissioner Freeman?
Yes.
Commissioner Henderson?
Yes.
Commissioner Orlando?
Yes.
Commissioner Gouganian?
Yes.
Commissioner Baraducci?
Yes.
Commissioner Smilage? Commissioner Smilage?
Yes.
Sorry, didn't hear it.
No.
Commissioner Hotelling?
Yes.
And Commissioner Hoffman?
Yes.
And I vote yes. And let's move on to the minutes of June 13th. I think I made one comment to Chelsea prior to the meeting. Anyone else?
I wasn't here, so it doesn't matter, but I couldn't find them. They were in the portal, just, you know, so Chelsea, maybe I'll check in with you tomorrow to see what I'm doing wrong.
You're not doing anything. No worries. I'll direct you to them.
Okay. But anyway, I wasn't at that meeting, so I couldn't have been.
Anyone else? All commissioners voting. Commissioner Freeman?
Yes.
Commissioner Henderson?
Yes.
Did I get a motion in a second? I don't think I did. May I have a motion to approve the minutes of June 13th?
I'll move. Proven.
Thank you. And second. A second.
I'll second. Second.
I saw David Baraducci. Thank you. All right. I'm going back. Commissioner Freeman.
Yes.
Sorry to make you say it twice. Commissioner Henderson.
Yes.
Commissioner Orlando.
Yes.
Commissioner Gouganian.
Yes.
Commissioner Baraducci.
Yes.
Commissioner Smilage.
Yes.
Commissioner Hotelling.
Yes.
Commissioner Hoffman.
Yes.
And I vote yes. All right, staff updates.
Well, we already have mentioned our new director of the Office of Historic Preservation, who is present. I believe he's still here. Murray, do you want to say a couple of words?
Well, just thank you for the opportunity to sit in and listen to the discussion. Appreciate it from the detailed consideration of Munton Bars on the previous application to much broader issues of the importance of designating places that are important to the community. So I appreciate having the opportunity to sit in and listen to some of the discussion.
Mr. Miller, in case anyone hasn't had the opportunity to sort of dig into it, would you give us a sort of three-sentence bio of where you're coming from at this?
Sure. I've been involved in historic preservation for about 36 years in four countries at the local government level, state, federal, and also in private practice. I've also taught at the University of Texas at Arlington School of Architecture. I still continue to practice in terms of designing appropriate infill in historic districts, which is a passion of mine, certainly enjoy the discussion about treatments, appropriate interpretation of standards and guidelines. So we'll be looking at how we actually uplift and give some regard to areas in historic preservation that are not traditionally or not typically elevated. And that's part of a not only citywide, but a national trend. And I'll be putting together some ideas and thoughts and perhaps coming to a commission meeting with some ideas for your feedback.
Thank you. We hope we see you often. Roseanne, were there other staff comments, or Joe or Chelsea or anybody?
I don't have any others.
I have a brief one, and that is that we are all really enjoying our new desks where we can see each other's faces and talk to each other. So I'm very, very thankful that that budget got approved and that that happened. So thank you. And thank you to Roseanne and Joe for making it happen. Mm.
And I'll just add, you know, please, if you haven't seen the archaeology exhibit yet at Faneuil Hall, please be sure and go and see it. It'd certainly be up through the summer and hopefully longer than that. So please take a look.
All right. May I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
David, and a second.
I'll second.
Thank you, Justine. By voice vote or waving of hands, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Good night. Thanks. Good night, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brad. Thank you.